welcome to the Tuesday, January 3rd, 2017. Casada Mouse Report. Breaking the law as always. 104.1 FM. Not so illegal at birthdeliberationradio.info, where you can get us from TuneIn and Streama. Okay. That's what Uncle Scam is doing. And I'm going to read to you from Global Research. The U.S. Embassy warned of terror attacks on New Year's Eve and recommended that American citizens in Turkey not celebrate the New Year's in crowded places. Astonishingly, a lone gunman nevertheless was able to take a taxi to a location near the upscale nightclub, which is across the street from a police station. He then walked into the club, pulled an assault rifle from his bag, and launched an assault that killed or wounded over 100 people, largely Turks and tourists from other Muslim countries. Immediately after the attack, Turkey's Radio and Television Supreme Council, RTUK, announced a gag order submitting reporting of the attack to state censorship. A massive manhunt is still underway across Turkey to locate the shooter. Well, this was a day after. Not sure where that all is happening. Anti-terrorism experts who looked at the footage of the security cameras at the nightclub said that the shooter seemed well-trained and efficient in the use of his assault rifle and shot wounded victims in the head execution style. He cleaned his weapon and changed his clothes, spending 13 minutes in the nightclub's kitchen, and later escaped the scene by hailing a taxi across the street from the police station. So let me go back to False Flag Weekly News for December 30th.
Miraculously, what appears to have been a NATO, perhaps Zionist, but certainly NATO-based overthrow, and this Fethullah Gulen that they blamed is a NATO puppet. He's a CIA.
Point from my perspective is the almost daily blog that Kevin Barrett puts out.
Well, how about the coups this year? There were a lot of various kinds of coups, but the two biggies were the coup attempt in Turkey, where Erdogan survived quite miraculously what appears to have been a NATO, perhaps Zionist, but certainly NATO-based overthrow. And this Fethullah Gulen that they blamed is a NATO puppet. He's a CIA friend who lives in Pennsylvania, USA. So that changed things, didn't it? When Erdogan survived that, he's now going to cozy up to Russia, and NATO lost another big one.
Yeah, this coup in Turkey has led to the dismissing or silencing of tens of thousands of professors, of many judges. There's been a particularly harsh assault on Kurds and their political organization in parliament. So was this coup actually real, or was it a sort of pseudo-engineered coup used to justify the kind of crackdown that we're not now seeing in Turkey?
Well, I think it was primarily a real coup, but it certainly has been used that way. I think Erdogan's probably happy not only that he just barely survived, which I think is the case, but also that he's now able to consolidate his grip on power by getting rid of this fifth column in his midst.
Now, I looked around for anything new from Sybil Edmonds, because, of course, she went into NBC and said, what do you have to say about the fact that you were producing, aiding and abetting this murder of hundreds in Turkey by saying that Erdogan had fled to Germany, and this being passed around as news all around the world in support of the assassination campaign led by the Gulen movement, the CIA proxies there, so... This is Gladio B. Of course, Sybil Edmonds taught us all about it. She was translator for the FBI, seeing that Grossman was overseeing the outing of Valerie Plame's company, so that when Libby eventually used the outing of her as a weapon against her husband, Joseph Wilson, for defecting from the Second Oil War, that had already been done by Grossman at the AQ Con Network, no relation to Al-Qaeda except that you gringo armed them both. the AQCon network knew that Valerie Plame's company was doing anti-terror work, and they were, doing WMD work. So,
speaking of coups, how about Rousseff in Brazil? There's another, U.S. NATO coup d'etat overthrowing a nation's leadership. I mean, that CIA has a lot of gall to talk about Russia overthrowing, America's elections and installing a puppet dictator, Trump, when they have done nothing but that in dozens and dozens of cases for the last, 50 plus years. And Brazil is a good example.
Oh, that reminds me, maybe I'll get to serve a Rico suit on one of the guests in our studio once upon one of these days. Maybe, you never know. We have guests from all over the world, not to scare anybody off, but...
After 9/11, when the United States looked towards the Middle East, it seems that they left unattended their older empire in Latin America, and Hugo Chavez and Evo Morales and President Rousseff in Brazil and various progressive forces took control of the governments against the so-called Washington Consensus. We're seeing now a backlash and U.S. going in to sort of firm up its control of its oldest part of its empire. Its
informal 2016
empire.
Was not only a year of coups, it was a year of Zionist genocide and Palestinian resistance. That's been pretty much the story in that part of the world ever since 1948 and the Nakba, the genocidal massacre of huge numbers of women and children designed to terrorize Palestinians into fleeing Israel. And this massive killing of Palestinians by Israelis has continued. We had a story from, when was it, last year, about this rabbi in Israel blessing the murder of Palestinians and calling for the killing of every last Palestinian, which is pretty much where this whole Zionism thing is heading. But there's been resistance, including the BDS movement, which, as we see in the next slide, has been making great strides in 2016.
Great strides at McGill University in Montreal, Canada. Yes. This assault on Palestinians... what is to be made of this Talmud? As I get deeper into this subject, the writings in the Talmud, which are often very ethnocentric and hostile to people who are not within the chosen community, what is to be made of that? Can you talk about the Talmud and what it actually says, or is just to refer to it inherently anti-Semitic and qualifies you for being fired and things like that?
Well, to me, I think there are exaggerations of the evil of the Talmud out there. The Talmud is basically a whole bunch of rabbis arguing. And do they have a parochial, tribal, pig-headed mentality? In my opinion, yes, generally, as a generalization. But there's also some good enlightened stuff in the Talmud. It's got all kinds of stuff, including some insane and disgusting stuff. It's probably too long of a topic to really get into right now. But in fact, I'm translating a book that goes into the scriptural basis in Judaism of a lot of tribalistic Jewish and Zionist behavior. It's a wonderful book by Laurent Guyonneau. It's called From Yahweh to Zion. And I hope that book will be out in the not too distant future. And maybe that will answer some of your questions, Tony.
Okay.
All right. Well, hey, let's move on to the ads and ends category. The final stories of the year that we're going to cover. We had Scalia, taken out of the Supreme Court by fair means or foul, probably foul. Veterans Today, I think, did a great job on covering that. He wasn't a shooting range he was at. It was this private club of essentially organized crime that works with the Federalist Society, a criminal mob that rules our federal judiciary. And that whole thing was dirty as all get out. How about Duterte over in the Philippines? Our next random leap to another huge defeat for the U.S. NATO empire. Once again, losing another critical base. Maybe those U.S. soldiers and sailors are going to be leaving real soon. What do you think, Tony?
Duterte is emerging as a major voice, critical of the Anglo-American Zionist empire. An important figure to watch. Of course, the Philippines used to be a formal colony of the United States. It's a major base for U.S. militarism, for Navy. And what's going to happen in Philippines in
is, again, it's not based on proof positive that these things were so, but it's based statements of Mrs. Clinton and others. So I would recommend that
Oh, sorry about all that, dear. Here's, oh, dead air. Well, it could be worse, but...
It's over. Huma Abedin just flipped. What she did has Hillary in tears. Well, Huma Abedin is one of Hillary's closest aides. She was the wife of Anthony Weiner, her estranged sexting husband to a minor teenager. She was given immunity by the FBI to testify concerning what she knew of Hillary Clinton's classified emails. And now it seems she'll be facing jail time. Otherwise, she has to disclose what dirt she knows on Hillary. And Hillary right now has to be very distraught.
All this is a little off-centered, but the facts that we got to mull over here are laid out somewhat. Huma Abedin's ex is sexting the 15-year-old, so the FBI are not interested in looking into this. Or anything that goes to the power, the pedophiles in power, the pizza great distraction aside, but there's an assassination campaign going on in Syria right now, and you're going to have crocodile tears for our death squads, for our assassins, after the eastern part. Oh, yes, we're in denial about it, too. But there's nothing to smile about here, because they're poisoning the water in Damascus. After the eastern part of the city of Aleppo was liberated by Syrian government forces, the local rebels and inhabitants in the Barada River Valley were willing to reconcile with the Syrian government. But the Al-Qaeda Takfiris disagreed and took over. The area is since under full Al-Qaeda control and thereby outside of the recent ceasefire agreement. On December 22nd, the water supply to Damascus was suddenly contaminated with diesel fuel and no longer consumable. A day later, Syrian government forces started an operation to regain the area and to reconstitute the water supplies. Photos and a video on social media since then accessible, but I saw them when they appeared. Oh, this is from globalresearch.ca. Showed the water treatment facility rigged with explosives. On December 27th, the facility was blown up and partly destroyed. Suddenly, new organized, quote, civil, unquote, media operations of allegedly locals in the area spread misinformation to Western media. There are 100,000 civilians under siege in West Baradai, unquote. In reality, the whole area once had, according to the last peacetime census, some 20,000 inhabitants. The White Helmets propaganda organization now also claimed to be in the area. The government had bombed the water treatment facility, unquote. Quote, the government had bombed the water treatment facility, unquote. The propaganda groups claimed this is a not plausible and is inconsistent with the pictures of the destroyed facility. These show a collapse of the main support booms on the roof, but no shrapnel impacts at all. A bomb breaking through the roof and exploding would surely have left pockmarks all over the place. The damage, in my judgment, occurred from well-designed, controlled explosives inside the facility. Some insurgents posted pictures of themselves proudly standing within the destroyed facility and making victory signs. That's globalresearch.ca, Damascus humanitarian catastrophe, Al-Qaeda opposition cuts water supply, leaves 5 million thirsty, Western media unconcerned. Obviously, I'm not Western media. Porque soy mexicano y estoy en México aquí mismo. Y vamos a crecer el pared al norte y oriente de cuatro rincones. Mm-hmm. Oh, back with. Oh, we already heard you. Okay, well, no, I wanted to cruise through the world crisis again.
Rather than rush to judgment, it would be important to focus on the track record of different players in this complicated universe. Now, we're also told that every device, every computer, every laptop, desktop, every smartphone, anything and everything that gets on the internet has a MAC address. Now, this is not the MAC of Macintosh or Apple computer, but it has it's an acronym for something else. The MAC address is 12 digits. And it's called a hexadecimal system, 16 choices for each digit. It goes from 0 to 9, and the letters go from A to F. So out of those 16, one of those 16 characters or keystrokes, 0 to 9, A to F, can fill one of the 12 digits. If you have the hexadecimal address,
ladies and gentlemen,
that
I hope
is
you have your Clinton
a
body count
hardware
open
feature of the computer you're using.
There,
so if you had this, this
to the
might be considered to be proof.
Throne taking over the White House, and at that point, who knows if anyone can stop her. Maybe it's already too late. Just in the last few weeks, there's been at least four people definitely confirmed dead who are within a very tight circle of the controversy surrounding Clinton, all this corruption and disgusting stuff going on, and they're dropping dead. We better be paying attention. We better be tracking these people.
Now, there's the Russians did a probably nauseatingly stupid line to cover up all this. Seth Rich is the probable leaker of the details about the theft of California from Bernie and all that. So he drops dead, is waived by Hillary as a gun control prop. Lucas, who served the DNC over all this, is drops dead. And then there's Ash and Victor Thorne and Monica Peterson.
What's really creepy is that just in the last week, in a 48-hour period, you had two people, two very vocal, well-known anti-Clinton activists and researchers die, and the media isn't talking about it at all. It's barely a peep about these two dead people anywhere. First of all, you have on August 1st, Victor Thorne. He's a very well-known Clinton researcher who wrote the definitive Clinton trilogy on Bill Clinton's sexual assaults, the drug running out of Mena, Arkansas, and the Clinton body count. That's what he's most well-known for. He's also a writer for American Free Press, and he was found dead from a gunshot wound on a mountaintop near his home.
Oh, Clinton body count is America's body count. 10 million in Congo, 450,000 in Syria, 150,000 in Libya. There is no question that she was responsible for that assassination campaign. Well, Poppy Bush launched the invasion of Rwanda from Uganda, from dictator Museveni in Uganda, via Paul Kagame. Is he Fort Leavenworth trained or something? So 1990 through 94 war culminates in the 94 shoot down of the Twin Plains by Kagame. Louise Arbor, was it, fired Carla Del Ponte for finding, you know, that guilt. So anyway, these are Clinton body counts. You know, it's in the 6, 7, 8 figures, in the tens of millions, really.
On his birthday, he would have been 54 years old, and they're calling it a suicide. But again, the police have not released an official statement. There are no official press releases on this at all. In fact, the only story really on this is from the American Free Press itself.
And now he's part of that body count, and there's been suggestions that maybe he had health problems. But given his track record being very well known in the alternative media, this is a guy who reveled in following controversy, in attacking people who deserve to be questioned, held accountable, and it seems very improbable to me that even if he was sick, depressed, whatever, suicidal, that he would do so with just a few months to go before the election, with all the frankly exciting and corrupt things to follow and comment and write about.
I mean, if this had been anybody else died like this, they would be in one of his books.
No question.
No question. And whenever the American Free Press interviewed his brother for a whole half an hour, the question was never brought up. How can his brother be so certain that this is just a suicide and not...
Oh, you failed to ask the obvious question. How can Brother Bill be so certain it was not a professional hit? Professional assassins can make it look like a suicide. That's what they did to Vince Foster. Oh, Mouse Society, he was talking about Ultra Air. That was the private contract line the Clintons and the Bushes, well, Poppy Bush was using. And so the Clintons are their cook stand attendants in the Guns for Drugs episode of the Opium War, the Contra War, the endless Contra War that's going on now, poisoning the water of Damascus, and crocodile tears for our assassins that are doing that shit. Wait a minute. You get two strong masculine guys who pin him down and force a gun in the mouth or side of his head and squeeze the trigger. How can the brother be so absolutely positive that was not done? Oh, yeah. He had bruises all over his body. He was not there. How can he be certain it was not a professional hit? Well, it was somebody... Lucas, I think, had the bruises on his body, but...
Not a professional hit against him in a very, very controversial election year for Hillary. Who knows if he was working on a new book about her.
So the theme in going back to Hellback Clinton, when we already got this sick fart joke, Trump, is that, of course, he had her at his wedding, and so, the throwing it to the Republicans, you know, the umpteenth Jim Crow coup, served to take her off the hot plate. And of course, she leads straight to Poppy Bush. He was even publicly saying he was going to vote for her. And I think she said, that fascist will have us all swinging from nooses. Well, he might do that in order to distance himself from those crimes. The murder of 450,000 in Syria being only most recent and notorious.
You have that. The very next day, you have Sean Lucas, who's...
Seth Rich, Sean Lucas, but the assassination of the 450,000 is part of a murder conspiracy that is in violation of U.S. law, conspiracy to murder internationally protected persons. Title 18, Section 1116, 1117. 1117 says conspiracy to violate 1116 is a violation of 1117. Blah, blah, blah.
Who's the most well-known for walking into the DNC on July 1st and serving the DNC and Debbie Wasserman Schultz with a nationwide class action lawsuit for fraud in rigging the primary against Bernie.
Hi, Becca.
How are you doing, Becca?
I'm just with the DNC upstairs.
With the DNC?
Yes.
All right. Well, this is going to be a service to the DNC.
Okay.
And this is for Debbie Wasserman Schultz.
Perfect.
You guys have been served.
Okay.
Thank you so much. We'll see you in court.
That was probably the most gratifying thing I've ever done.
You ever done? Able to deliver the documents?
Yeah, they wouldn't give us any of the head honchos, which I kind of had a feeling wasn't going to happen. But we did make contact with somebody from the Democratic National Committee's office,
and they've been served. Democracy has prevailed tonight.
Exactly, and you guys all were witness to it.
Which, if anything, is a message. Not only do they want to defeat that lawsuit, but they want to discourage other people from doing so.
Apparently his girlfriend found his body on his bathroom floor. They've not released a cause of death in this. Rumors have been floating around that he died in his sleep. Was he sleeping on the bathroom floor? I mean, that doesn't even make sense. So right there, August 1st and August 2nd, you have two dead people, two dead anti-Clinton people in 2 days. And the mainstream press isn't saying a word. If you go to Google News and type in Victor Thorne's name or Sean Lucas's name, you're going to find one, maybe two stories about each guy in the bathroom floor. I mean, that doesn't even make sense.
Oh, I was just reading here. It says, also read, Hillary Clinton murdered John F. Kennedy Jr. I am JFK opens Pandora's box of conspiracy theories. The activist was known to many distressed Democrats as the young man who served, you can't quite see what website the CCC video channel is. Clinton body count plus 5 in just 6 weeks. Back to that.
Sense. So right there, August 1st and August 2nd, you have two dead people, two dead anti-Clinton people in 2 days. And the mainstream press isn't saying a word. If you go to Google News and type in Victor Thorne's name or Sean Lucas's name, you're going to find one, maybe two stories about each guy in the alternative media. You're not going to see a word of this, not even in local news reports.
There's also Joe Montano, who is the top aide to Tim Kaine, who of course is now the vice presidential candidate, but who was, right before Debbie Wasserman Schultz, chairman of the DNC. And when did Joe Montano die? Supposedly of a heart attack? July 25th, the day that the DNC convention started, and right after the WikiLeaks dump came out exposing all of the DNC corruption. What did Joe Montano know? But that isn't the only one. There's, of course, Seth Rich, who was a member of the DNC National Committee. He was a staffer. He had written some voter sign-up apps to help people find their voting precincts. And from what's been said about him, he may have had direct access to the entire nation's database of voters and quite possibly had firsthand knowledge of voter fraud. He was rumored to testify. I don't think that's been confirmed. But the fact of the matter is, he was gunned down at 4:19 in the morning only a few weeks ago, July 10th, 2 weeks ahead of the Democratic National Committee.
These tragedies tear at our soul. And so do the incidents that don't even dominate the headlines. Just this past Sunday, a young man, Seth Rich, who worked for the Democratic National Committee to expand voting rights, was shot and killed in his neighborhood in Washington. He was just 27 years old. Surely we can agree that weapons of war have no place on the streets of America.
And they suggested it was like a botched robbery, but they didn't take his wallet, they didn't take his expensive watch, they didn't take his cell phone. His body was covered in bruises, and even just a few days ago, August 1st, police officially have said there's no updates in the murder. They have no idea why. He was just randomly gunned down in the streets. Well, you know, D.C. is a very violent place. Was he going to testify? Did he have information? Well, Assange has hinted strongly that it could have been a DNC staffer who leaked the WikiLeaks stuff that surrounded the controversy of the convention, showed the corruption of Debbie Wasserman Schultz, and it's possible that was Seth Rich. Wasserman Schultz admitted that she did know him personally and said nice things, you know, on the surface when he had died, and there are some very serious questions surrounding that for obvious reasons.
But that's not all, because just a few weeks before that, you have former United Nations official John Ash dying while lifting weights. Initially, the United Nations reported that he died of a heart attack, but then local police actually came out and said, no, his windpipe was crushed. His throat was crushed when a barbell fell on it, which they said was an accident, and that he did it to himself while working out, which, interestingly enough, just so happens to mirror the plot of a Columbo episode from the 70s called An Exercise in Fatality, where a murderer drops a barbell on a guy.
What did you say? You said that he was here alone, he decided to work out?
And makes it look like a weightlifting accident.
Because that's how ridiculous it is.
It's so ridiculous. And it just so happens that Ash was set to testify in a huge bribery scandal that, you guessed it, would have led right back to the Clintons and the DNC. Apparently Ash and a Chinese businessman, whose name I'm not going to say because I'll probably just butcher the crap out of it, were accused of smuggling $4.5 million into the United States and lying about what it was going to be for. And the Chinese businessman is identified in a 1998 Senate document as the source of hundreds of thousands of dollars illegally being funneled through an Arkansas restaurant to the DNC during the Clinton administration. It turned into a huge scandal when all of this came out because it turned out that the businessman was favored with more than 10 visits to the White House, including an elevator ride with Hillary Clinton. And all of these people have come out to say that this trial would have been very embarrassing, so John Ash's death, and you can see him here shaking hands with Hillary, is very, very convenient to the Hillary campaign. He winds up with a barbell crushing his windpipe. It's almost like a mafia movie. If it was in a mafia movie, wouldn't that send a message to any other snitches who might talk, a guy having his windpipe crushed?
And keep in mind, all these dots that officially, I'm sure they're going to say, are not connected, has been since Hillary was cleared by the FBI, not prosecuted for the email scandal, since Bernie was forced out of the race, and there's been a lot of dirty, dirty stuff going on with that. And how many more people are going to have to drop dead for her to get her hands around the door to the Oval Office and into power? How many more people are going to mysteriously die from absurd and ridiculous causes of death that just don't add up? I mean, use your common sense. You don't have to be a conspiracy theorist to see that people die around Clinton corruption scandals.
So that's 5 dead people in 6 weeks. How many more people have to die so the country can be forced to pretend to elect Hillary Clinton?
Well, let's go to the, one I just interrupted. Well, it's the beginning, so let me go to this other one. Well, okay, this will go into more detail while I get the other one queued up. Knock, knock. It's a... Hama Abedin there. Anthony Weiner's ex, child sexter, immune from FBI investigation because of your assassination campaign, synonymous with America, founded the year after UK abolished slave trade.
It's over. Huma Abedin just flipped. What she did has Florida. Regated says, image surfaces of Huma Abedin crying on the plane as Clinton campaign finds out the FBI has reopened the email investigation. Now she's nowhere to be found. Trump Street Team Florida says, Huma Abedin is not on the plane with Hillary Clinton today. She must be freaking out, especially since she signed this document. This was on October 29th, 8:30 p.m. Hillary is throwing her top aide under the bus. Gabrielle De Medenti says, no sign of Huma Abedin on Clinton's campaign plane as we fly to Florida. By the way, she was on board to and from Iowa yesterday. So Huma Abedin's immunity deal is now finished. By withholding evidence during her FBI interview that she had a home computer and then lying that she only printed them at the State Department.
Her history and Alani connections are mostly known to the American people. Who is Huma Abedin? What do we know about Hillary Clinton's number one aide and sidekick for 20 years? Hillary spoke at Huma's wedding saying, if I had a second daughter, it would be Huma. This presidential election decides who gets to run the most powerful powerful country on Earth, so it is obviously very important to understand the facts about Huma Abedin, as she may very soon become Chief of Staff in the White House. I'll be simplifying an intricate web of people, organizations, and events that unraveled over many years. All of this information and more is available online for anyone who has access to Google. Anyway, here is an unbelievable story of infiltration, unfolding before our eyes, and the most important aspect of this election that you definitely won't see on CNN.
Now, of course, he eventually runs into the, these are the people that did 9/11 lie, which is what all these genocidal wars murdering millions is based on, and I don't want to have anything to do with that. Of course, Trump's Muslim bashing is part of all this, and his appointment of the hitman Giuliani, knew about those demolitions, murdering all those people after the air defense stand down and Pentagon drone strikes. He's just kind of less obviously connected to this assassination campaign that they're going to get into. But of course, nobody outside of a country, not the Mossad, not the Sod scum, are able to give the Pentagon a holiday. That was Operation Northwoods. Go back to 62 under JFK's nose. Of course, they put him in the place of the American to be killed and immediately tried to invade Cuba, blaming them. And I have that from Jim Wilcott, the CIA whistleblower on the Kennedy assassination. The plan was to have Oswald linked to Castro and when Kennedy was killed. So that would be the excuse to invade. Of course, Oswald was CIA agent, Marines, secret. Because he was in Gary Powers' book, he was saying, well, that's how the CIA sabotaged the detente with Eisenhower. Oswald gave the elevation of the U-2 that had Gary Powers shot down. And then Gary, of course, blows up, conveniently silencing that little story. But anyway, here we're going to run over these details. So Huma Abedin's father is this guy linked to the Brotherhood, the misogyny corporation that... Oh, by the way, the gringo scum like to sing about your shores of Tripoli valor. Well, you made peace with my enemies. There's a millennium of slavery that I'm ready to dig up John Brown's body and put that moldy uniform on and go to war over. But then I ran into the peace movement, and we still get to stand in the way of all this, just without spilling blood, so... Well, except you, they're free to spill mine anytime you want, because you can run this shit over my dead body. Happy hippies, just don't swallow this shit. Now, that Istanbul attack, that's Gladio B. And I was hoping Sybil had something, but here we go with some random YouTube things. And there's slightly right-wing tint to this. Oh, these are the people that did 9/11, and that's all a lie, of course. But nevertheless, the details are, you know, Hillary's connection to Osama bin Laden. Tim Osman, my Colonel Gaddafi, put on the Interpol wanted list the first person to do so when he was the last to drop the Arab oil embargo. So in 1973, the West is marching north through Lebanon, east through Syria, south through, you know, that. And the response is the oil embargo. You know, cheap Arab oil is coming to the end because they're all united, finally, with that. So in 1973, Dirty Dick is going to throw acid in women's faces by backing the likes of Gulbud and Heckamotter as a ploy. You know, and this is piggybacking on the slime buckets up the Thames that have been doing this since forever. The alliance with the Arabs against the Turks, who, I mean, we betray the Arabs with the Sykes-Picot thing, the Anglo-French betrayal of the Arabs. That's World War One. Now, in World War One, the gringos didn't give a damn about the Armenians that are being massacred by the Turks at that time, by Turkey. The current government still guilty of that crime. Even though they coup against them, they just took off more than they could chew, and they pushed them into the orbit. So hopefully the Scythian thing will be happening, and the West will not be able to find them. Darius will march in there with 750,000, and even the Persians can't catch the Scythians. But not to blame Iran for Darius, but Cyrus we kind of like. He restored the tomb of Asmodeus. as Alexander restored the tomb of Cyrus. So, you know, Greeks and Persians are not the same as the Romans. And after Roman rule, Europe lost the ability to count until invaded by Islamic Arabs, who picked up the cipher to represent the infinite divided by nothing, which, of course, West is impossible because we are basically Rome rule by Roman numeral, which is pretty dumb, but...
There are four main players in this.
Oh, now remember grandson Hitler's banker, son of Kennedy killer, Poppy Bush, wanted to ban Arabic script, so that's just an example of how stupid gringos are, can be.
Hillary Clinton, Huma Abedin, Abdullah Omar Nassif, and Saudi Arabia. Huma was born in the USA. Then when she was 2 years old, her family moved to Saudi Arabia. They lived in Saudi Arabia for 16 years. Huma returned to the USA when she was 18 to study at George Washington University. Only after 2 years in the country, she became an intern for Hillary Clinton, and soon after started working full-time. Also in 1996, Huma was working at her family business, a journal by the Institute of Muslim Minority Affairs. The Abedin's family business is owned by the Muslim World League, Saudi Arabia's global organization that promotes violent Wahhabi Islam. They even share an office at 46 Goodge Street, London. Saliha Abedin, Huma's mother, and Hassan Abedin, Huma's brother, currently work there still. Abdullah Omar Nassif is one of the founders of the Muslim World League and served as vice president of the Saudi Kingdom Shura Council. He created Huma's family business along with her father. He also funded Al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden, as did Saudi Arabia, for many years. His organization was declared guilty of funding Al-Qaeda terrorism by the USA State Department. During the Holy Land Foundation trial in 2001, the FBI discovered that the Muslim Brotherhood gave over $12 million to Hamas, the terrorist organization. They also found the secret 18-page plan for the Muslim Brotherhood, which explains that their work in America is a kind of grand jihad in eliminating and destroying Western civilization from within. This document is available online in full. One of the many listed organizations within the Muslim Brotherhood was the Muslim Students Association, which Huma was an executive board member on for 3 years. Only 2 years after Huma left, Anwar al-Awlaki, the al-Qaeda member and preacher to 9/11 hijackers, became chaplain of the same Muslim Students Association that Huma was a part of. To make things worse, Huma's mother, Saliha Abedin, is a leading member of the Muslim Sisterhood, the women's division of the Muslim Brotherhood. All of these organizations share the same goal and tell us repeatedly in plain English. They want to destroy Western civilization and replace our laws with oppressive Sharia law like you see in Saudi Arabia. On 9/11, Abdullah Omar Nassif, Saudi Arabia, and Al-Qaeda tried to do just that. Where was Huma that day? The top funders of the 9/11 attacks created Huma's family business. Huma was officially working for the terrorists and Hillary Clinton the day those towers fell. Huma Abedin has never come forward with any information about her Saudi co-workers. Absolutely none of Huma's connections were mentioned by her during the investigations into 9/11. She has made no mention of her relationship to Abdullah Omar Nassif, the Muslim World League, Muslim Brotherhood, or her current status at her family business, which could be of unimaginable assistance to the FBI and the CIA. Huma's mother still works for the Muslim World League, yet Huma has made no effort to distance herself from her mother or her radical views. Saliha Abedin.
Well, that was probably where I bailed out on that one, because of course the FBI investigating outsiders will never answer that question. So we're in denial about that 9/11 business, and denial is not a river in Egypt. but this is the Nile song.
Hey, as they're emerging as a major voice, you know, critical of the Anglo-American Zionist Empire, he's an important figure to watch. Of course, the Philippines.
Spoke of saying that the United States had been supporting ISIL and other terrorists. Now, questions are being raised, and it remains to be seen what impact the comments from President Erdogan will have on the alliance between the United States and Turkey. Now, in the past, the United States has described Turkey as a key ally in the region.
The United States, as a friend and partner of Turkey.
Turkey's been a strong ally for decades.
We believe Turkey's a genuine partner in destroying ISIL.
Now, Turkey has recently accused the United States of not doing enough to support it in the fight against ISIL. Recently, a statement was made on behalf of Turkish President Erdogan in which he described how operations are in which the Turkish forces were going out to fight against terrorism were not being adequately supported by the United States. Now, the comments come in the context of a recently held meeting in which Russia, Iran and Turkey, the foreign ministers of these countries, met in Moscow to discuss the humanitarian catastrophe in Aleppo, evacuating civilians from the city, as well as forcing the militants out of the city. In the aftermath of these talks, there has been widespread speculation that some kind of new coalition is being formed in the region between Turkey, Russia, and Iran. A U.S. State Department spokesperson, John Kirby, was pressed on the speculation that the United States has been sidelined in the new talks regarding Aleppo.
So Mr. Kerry doesn't see it as a snub.
No, the Secretary doesn't see this as a snub at all.
Does he not at least feel the U.S. is being sidelined, if not excluded, from what was something the U.S. was leading on?
We are not excluded.
Right now, this leadership that you're speaking of is all past tense. Is that not true?
I would disagree.
They don't seem to want him to be involved.
Well, they can speak for who they want involved or not. I mean, we recognize that we weren't invited, that this was between Russia, Turkey, and Iran.
Now, it remains to be seen what impact today's comments will have on the continued coalition between the United States and Turkey in the region.
During its latest briefing, a U.S. State Department spokesperson was asked to comment on Erdogan's latest accusation.
I mean, it's ludicrous, to be honest.
That was U.S. of A-Hole by DJ Mouse. Now, let's go here. Bury my heart at Wounded Knee. Knock, knock. Come in. Oops. Not the movie. Oops. Pause, pause, screech, stop. Never mind.
Darling of the energy companies, Indian legislation's on the desk of a do-right congressman. Now he don't know much about the issue, so he picks up the phone and he asks advice of the senator out in Indian country. Darling of the energy companies, who are ripping off what's left of the reservations. I learned a safety rule, I don't know who to thank. Don't stand between the reservation and the corporate bank. They'll send in federal tanks. It isn't nice, but it's reality. Bury my heart. Pretty.
Kony 2012 was a viral video seen by over 100 million people around the world. And while many remember the meme, they probably don't recall what it was about. In reality, it was a well-orchestrated attempt supported by U.S. political establishment and a group of evangelical Christian filmmakers to encourage the U.S. to send special forces troops into Uganda to hunt down a warlord named Joseph Kony. The viral sensation was popular, but it received more attention mocking it than did supporting its alleged cause. But a new documentary released this year seeks to make some sense out of the Akali genocide and the 20-year war waged by their president against the elusive Joseph Kony.
Of course, this is 10 million corpses in the Central Congo, the blood on the Clinton hands that, of course, is Republican blood, because 1990, that's who was in the White House launching the invasion from Uganda, which the Museveni forces are backed by you, gringo, so...
war that left 90% of those Akali people in concentration camps. At one point in 2005, the World Health Organization reported that 1,000 people were dying in those camps every week. Recently, Sean Stone sat down with journalist Milton Alamadi. He attended the Graduate School of Journalism at Columbia, where he won the prestigious James Weschler Memorial Prize Award in International Journalism. And his work has been seen in publications like the New York Times and the City Sun. Sean started by asking Mr. Alamadi to explain the allegations made in a brilliant genocide documentary against the president of Uganda.
Well, typically when we think of genocide, we think of Rwanda, for example, right? Where in 1994, after the plane carrying President Habyarimana and the president of Burundi, Cyprien Ntaryamire, was shot down during the conflict between the government of Rwanda and the invading insurgency, the Rwanda Patriotic Front. And then almost immediately, there was inter-ethnic violence between Hutu and Tutsi, where we saw on a daily basis on TV, people actually either getting cut with a machete or getting shot. And that is typically what we view as genocide. But in Uganda, it was different. When General Yoweri Museveni seized power in 1986, and he observed that he was getting some resistance from the primarily the northern part of Uganda, he came up with this idea, which was to confine 90% of the population in concentration camps. And in these camps, there was no food, there was no hydration, there was no sanitation, there was sexual violence by his soldiers who were supposedly protecting this population from the rebels who were fighting against him. The World Health Organization did a study ultimately in 2005 and found that in these camps, there were more than 1,000 excess deaths per week. So if we go by that estimate alone, we would be talking about 52,000 people dead per year. And those camps lasted for at least 20 years, meaning it's quite possible 1 million people died. And the most shameful thing is that the Western countries that support General Museveni were aware of this. And why do I say this? Because John Egeland, who at the time was the under Secretary of the United Nations Under Secretary General for Humanitarian Affairs, went to Uganda. And he observed this, and he called this the world's worst neglected crisis. And he wrote about it. And yet nothing was done by the United Nations or the countries that primarily support Museveni with financing for his budget, military training, and arms. And these countries are primarily the United States and the United Kingdom. That's why this documentary was referred to as a brilliant genocide. It was done in a very different manner that allowed Museveni to get away with it, at least up to today.
So the idea is that because Museveni has been a very strong U.S. ally, now that he's, even though he's been a dictator essentially, I mean, he says he's democratically elected, but he's been powerful over 30 years now, the right. U.S. ignores this tragedy while then focusing on its neighbor, for example, President Bashir in Sudan, and
right.
Obviously the conflict there, and for example, the Darfur situation has been correct. Highlighted. The world community, but Uganda is ignored, and it's because of this relationship with Museveni. Why is our relationship so strong? Why are we so allied as a U.S., I'm sorry, the U.S. country is so allied with Museveni as president?
Okay, for a number of reasons. One reason is that he has positioned himself as the U.S. ally in the war against Islamic quote-unquote terrorism. And primarily, as we see, Somalia is in a very chaotic position, very anarchic. And what Museveni did was that he volunteered Ugandan soldiers to police Somalia, to fight against Al-Shabaab. And he stationed 10,000 Ugandan troops in Somalia. So the United States obviously would prefer to have Ugandan soldiers die in Somalia instead of American troops. So for that reason, he gets a blank check. But even if we look at the Somalia situation, and anybody can do this research, it's been documented that his own army, Museveni's army, has been fueling some of the violence in Somalia.
Right, Milton, and he's talking about Congo and Central Africa. Nigeria's got the same situation. They got this Al-Shabaab, or is it Boko Haram? Either case, the Chibok kidnapping. This is going down under the nose. Okay, Al-Muntada Fund is supporting these guys. Those are Saudis. You know, they have embassies. They have people responsible. The government knows who these people are. We know they know who those people are. That's how Clinton can call Good Luck Jonathan and twist the Nigerians' arms to get them to vote for genocide in Palestine, okay? You got 10 million corpses thanks to Poppy Bush and their Mina Coke stand attendants, the Clinton death squad bosses. So this is running cover. They use our bogus war on our shithook Quran raping assholes from 73, so an acid in women's faces is a payback for the Arab oil embargo. So you gringo like your cheap Arab oil, and you're going to look the other way while all these atrocities are committed in your name. 10 million corpses in the Congo and counting. Well, that was under Clinton. Of course, Trump had her at his wedding, so all these people are from the right of her. Giuliani, Bolton, none of these guys are going to change any of this story. So maybe they won't have the direct connection, but they're, you know, they don't need it. They got the same henchmen in the mid-level.
Attacking civilians and also by selling weapons to part of the elements that are fighting the Somali government. So in other words, Museveni used the Somali conflict as a sort of a way to blackmail the United States, because he's threatening several times to withdraw Ugandan troops from Somalia any time the United States raises the issues of human rights. That's the first part. Then the second part is that Uganda has intervened militarily many times in the Democratic Republic of the Congo. And as a result of the Ugandan invasions into the Congo, there's been a continuous conflict in the Congo that's resulted in the deaths of more than 6 million people. But even though these atrocities are occurring in the Congo, there's some Western countries that have been mining resources from the Eastern Congo. So Museveni, even despite the death of millions of people in the Congo, is still being protected, even in the Congo, because there's some Western companies, including American companies and Canadian companies, that are benefiting from the resources of the Congo.
And as I segue in this glitchy little thing to the, I probably won't be able to do it unless this computer's really quick, to the International Tribunal on Crimes of Church and State. Now, there's a little secret. DJ Mouse's actual name is Greg Allen Gittin. He's on Facebook, G-E-T-T-Y, as in the oil parasites. I don't know. The kamikazes missed, and so they adopted my dad when he was out at sea, and I got stuck with the name, and they didn't get the death benefit. So, that's how you will find such a... Never mind. She was crying for her mother at the top of the stairs. Then Caldwell kicked her. She went falling down the stairs and just lay there. She wasn't breathing. She wasn't moving. I see that all the time. That was eyewitness Harriet Nahani on the killing of 14-year-old Maisie Shaw by Alfred Caldwell, Christmas Eve, 1946. That's at http://itccs.org. International Tribunal on Crimes of Church and State, and there's a picture of the eyewitness, Harriet Nahani, who died suddenly after her arrest and incarceration in February 2007. You can see her there pictured at the protest. So, goodbye, Harriet. Goodbye, Macy. And back to the genocide. Brilliant.
Well known also, because in 2005, the International Court of Justice ruled against Uganda and found Uganda liable for massacres in the Congo and plunder of resources, and ordered Uganda to pay Congo $10 billion. Not a dime has been paid. This story was widely ignored by most international media. And then the second thing that happened is this. The Congo referred the same alleged crimes to the International Criminal Court. And according to an article in the Wall Street Journal on June 8, 2006, it's a front page story. General Museveni himself contacted then UN Secretary General Kofi Annan and asked him to block that investigation. Now, I don't know what happened, but it seems to me that investigation was indeed blocked.
Who do we know Kofi Annan from? He was a responsable during that Museveni genocide, the invasion from Uganda in 1990, culminating with, and remember, those machetes were brought from Kigali, from Uganda, from, what's the capital of Uganda? Anyway, Kigali is Rwanda, but the machetes came from Uganda. So supposedly the Tutsi invasion is the same source as these machetes. So it would be like the massacre of like thousands of people by the Clinton jihadi death squads in Bosnia, in Srebrenica, that preceded the NATO bombing there and killing more people, actually. But where were we? You can foment a back and forth, and then you just come in on the side that started it originally.
Because if the ICC had gone by the same set of facts used by the International Court of Justice that found Uganda liable, Museveni might have been indicted.
But, of course, we get blindsided by truth. So that's the name of my show, my February 2nd, 2016 Mouse Report is titled Blindsided by Truth. Thank you. on. I just played that song. I won't subject you to my guitar work again. But let me bump it up here until I get the notorious knock knock. Well, political tables, if you were to go to all the people off the ballot and then juxtapose them with all the people that are on, and I don't think Bernie Sanders will save Palestine, but other than that, he's pretty good. Well, I must remember you. He bayoneted my stunt double. Bernie bayoneted Libya, along with 150,000 other dead, along with all those Dixiecrats, so... No, see, I was going to go to how Siegel faction members plan to dismember Pacifica and divide up the pieces worth over $100 million among themselves. Siegel and his partner, board member Margie Wilkinson, even went so far as to create approximately 2 years ago a secret shadow corporation under their control, discovered only by accident barely 4 months ago by Pacifica's secretary, whose purpose, Siegel admitted when pressed, was to acquire the licenses and assets of Pacifica stations if the foundation went into bankruptcy. A bankruptcy, it now appears clear, that they had long been trying to engineer through their positions on the board and Siegel's position as Pacifica's attorney. The assets and licenses of the foundation that they intended to acquire are estimated to be worth in excess of $100 million. As Pacifica board members and fiduciaries, Siegel and Wilkinson were legally obligated to inform the board not only that their secret corporation existed, but also how they totally controlled it, what its destructive purpose was, and how its existence created a highly illicit conflict of interest, i.e. their shadow corporation succeeded only if Pacifica failed. But of course, they did not reveal any of that to the board. Siegel was doubly obligated as Pacifica's attorney to make his control of the secret corporation and the severe conflict of interest it entailed known to the board. His failure to do so, along with numerous other allegations of serious professional misconduct, are currently the subject of an investigation by California Bar Association and the California Attorney General. We are keeping our fingers crossed, and you did hear Jerry Brown quoted as saying, yes, he's leaving the Brown machine, who, of course, Willie Brown is inside the loop when there was that.
Internal review of this, I think probably before the chief had even seen that video. And a lot of people were really angry to say, wait, you didn't even look for the facts. You immediately said that the cops must have acted properly based only on what they said happened, which, as it turns out, does not seem to be consistent with the video evidence. So, and the mayor, of course, has supported the police chief. So what we have now, and why a lot of people are angry, is we have a young man who is dead, and there's been no accountability at all. The officers who shot him are back on duty, collecting a paycheck. The chief, who oversees the department, continues to collect a rather large paycheck and is back on duty with the support of the mayor. Nothing has happened.
Well, okay, that was like a year ago, and since the murder of Jessica Nelson, the chief resigned and escaped the crime scene, actually, but...
No one is accountable for this killing. So I think that's what has the protesters very angry. Protesters took over part of Mayor Lee's swearing in, and at one point shouted so loudly for justice for Mario Woods that you couldn't hear the mayor actually getting sworn in. It was very clear how unhappy people were. In fact, Governor Jerry Brown did the swearing in, and after he had sworn in the mayor, he looked at him and said, "I'm going to leave you to your fate," and walked away. So yesterday there was a big march downtown by Mario Woods supporters, people who want justice, marched down to the Super Bowl city. You know, a couple hundred protesters and probably an equal number or more of police officers watching them, trying to keep them out of the street. As the Super Bowl arrives and the national media comes to San Francisco, there are going to be more and more protests like this, with people trying to shine a light on the lack of accountability in the police department in San Francisco, as there have been in police departments all over the country. Lack of accountability for police officers shooting and killing young men of color.
My guest is Tim Redman. We're going to open the phones in about 20 minutes to your phoned-in questions and comments at 1-800-95-
Well, this is previously recorded.
With all things related to Halfway to the Stars City, they're collecting money for a statue.
Certainly, that, you know, if that's what they want to spend their money on, that's fine. One could also certainly argue that we have, you know, we're in an El Nino situation where homeless people are threatened every day with dying of pneumonia exposure on the streets as the temperatures drop and the rain continues. And you could certainly argue that some of that money might be better spent taking care of some of those people.
Well, Charlotte Schultz, formerly Charlotte Mayard, Charlotte Swig, Charlotte, she's been Charlotte a lot of time.
Let's run down the bad record for San Francisco. Having sat in front of George Charlotte's limo outside the Ritz-Carlton when Tiki Killer was there and Code Pink was snake dancing in front of their limo and there were like three cops on the corner and never mind. Where were we?
Schultz seems to be relatively healthy. So, in any case...
I murdered Gaddafi's daughter, but not even getting into the drone bombers' genocide of mother of African Union's country.
She is the head of... What's the word for it? She's... it'll come to me. She's... like the diplomacy.
She's the city's chief of protocol.
Protocol, that's the word I was searching for, the chief of protocol. In the meantime, back to Mario Woods. The mayor, of course, backed up the police chief, uh, 100%. And then when this controversy didn't go away, he has finally, a month later, decided to call in the Justice Department and asked them to investigate in an attempt to, clean up the mess that is clearly in his lap right now?
Yes. I mean, he really had no choice. The Board of Supervisors was calling on the Justice Department to investigate. The city, the people of San Francisco, have lost faith in the ability of the city itself to properly investigate this because, as I say, this is the third one. So far, there's been no accountability.
We're very outspoken at the beginning because they didn't know there was a video of the event, and they would have gotten away with it if it weren't for the video. So, quite frankly, I think they were blindsided by the fact that they got caught.
Blindsided by the truth. Oh, my goddess. Now, that may, careful if you were paying attention, that may have given you a mental whiplash because, of course, you would think that being hit from behind by something you don't see, which is being blindsided, would be hard to do when it's something you know. Now, we don't know it, so we are being blindsided. The mayor is being paid to play.
Hey!